Hey everyone, and welcome to a very special Android Central podcast. We're mixing it up this week. We did our LG G2 thing yesterday. Today it's the turn of the Galaxy Note 3. So I'm Alex Dobie from Android Central. I'm joined by Jerry Hildenbrand.
Hey everybody, what's happening?
And over on the left, we've got Andrew Martinik.
How's it going, everybody?
So we're switching it up for our usual Friday podcast thing. We're doing a lot of device-specific stuff right now. We've got reviews in the works, and the big new device is this thing, the Galaxy Note 3. We got a bunch of questions. We got your questions from earlier today. We're taking some live questions right now. That's been turned on. So if you're watching, those are going to be rolling in. We'll answer those later in the podcast. So let's just kick it off. How are we all doing this week, guys?
Doing great. I don't have a Note 3, but...
So, yeah, exactly. That's what we're mentioning, right? I'm the only one with a Note 3 right now. This thing's launched in Europe. It's going to be launching in the US next week. It's a big phone. It's both literally and figuratively, right? It's, I think, really Samsung's main sort of flagship now. It's gone from being the S4 to being the Note. This is the monster for the rest of the year.
Yeah, you and I discussed that this morning, and I think you're right on the money. They want to put some R&D time into the Note 3.
Mm. And there's a lot of cool stuff here. I mean, we did our hands-on video post yesterday. That's a great place to start if you've not looked at this thing yet. There's a ton of new stuff, and of course, not just about the pen and the screen, but all the stuff behind that. And there's a ton of other things like 4K video recording. And so from your guys' perspective, going from the G2 yesterday, on the face of it, kind of similar phones. We have a big screen, mm-hmm. We have slim bezels, we have the latest CPU, Snapdragon 800. From the perspective of you guys who have come from that, what are you looking for on the Note 3?
Well, we talked a lot yesterday about just the general size of it. And, you know, you pointed out that the Note 3 is, you know, it's still a huge device. And, you know, I'm just kind of curious to see, the Note 2 never really kind of did it for me in terms of like that trade-off of having, you know, the multi-window and the pen and all that kind of stuff, being a worthwhile trade-off for the size. So I would be most curious to see if Samsung's, you know, gone that extra step forward to, you know, really make that value proposition. You know, it sounds like they're doing a lot of crazy stuff, but, you know, is that going to be worth it in the end for the size?
Yeah, I think going back to the original Note, there was a lot of stuff on there that kind of worked okay, but it took them a couple of generations to get it pared down to the point where it was really worth, it was really a good value proposition to have on a device of this size. I think it's also taken time for the market to catch up, right, for 5-plus-inch screen phones to be the norm. And this still is a big phone to use now, but I think from the perspective of, you know, coming from another phone, there are a lot of 5-inch phones out there, and I've been using the Xperia Z1 this past week or so. Jumping from that to this, not such a big step, even though it's 5 to 5.7.
To me, it's just too big, and that's just because the way I carry my phone around. But I've always told myself that, you know, if they reach a point in the features that outweighs the way I like to carry my phone in my shirt pocket, like an old man. Yeah, your dad carries his phone in his shirt pocket. They laugh at me. But I can adjust. And I'll tell you, that air hover stuff with the little fan menu, dude, if it works as good as it looks like it works on your video, especially that scrapbook where you can just capture areas, this may be the device that can get me into the big phone country.
So I was saying earlier today, this, I think, is the first Note that is really a mainstream device. They've got it to the point where people are used to holding devices of this size. They've also managed to pare down things like bezels and all this other stuff to the point where it's really, the reachability factor is not too bad. If you look at the area the phone you can reach is pretty reasonable. The notification thing is still a bit of a weird action when you have to sort of, if you have one hand, you've got to put your hand like this and then reach down from the top. Yeah. There's a bit of awkwardness there. I think it's still going to depend on the kind of device you want, the kind of person that you are. But it's slowly getting there. It's slowly becoming more mainstream.
Yep. And I mean, by looks, you had the original Note for a while. Is it still less wide than the original?
So the original note was actually a different aspect ratio. It was 16 by 10, and that was a big difference. We saw last year Gunk the Note 2 was 16 by 9. Mm-hmm. It was thinner, and that made a huge, huge difference to ease of use. I think the other thing with this, which makes it a lot easier to hold, is the new back panel, right? Because this has gone from being shiny plastic, and we've had a lot of shiny plastic phones from Samsung over the past year. Now it's soft touch. It actually feels nice and is easy to grip, which is really, really crucial.
Big plus.
And, and it's worth noting that the other colors are a little more of the shiny side, right? And the black one's the one that's the soft touch?
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. The soft touch, the black one is soft touch. The other ones have more of a traditional paint job. I mean, Samsung had a ton of different colors there. You have the shiny metallic ones, which are shiny metallic.
Sorry. They're calling me. That glittery orange one?
Glittery orange one. So, you've got soft touch plastic on this one. You've got a traditional sort of matte paint job on the others. I think there are some darker ones that are also soft touch, and we've been over the reasons why you only want soft touch on dark colored phones. This is the first Samsung phone I've used in a long time that actually feels nice to hold in the hand. There's basically no shiny plastic on this thing, right? There's the trim around the outside. That's basically it.
And it's a good testament that, hey, Samsung can use the material they want to use, and they have reasons, and price isn't all of the reasons. They like to use that polycarbonate and still make it look and feel very premium, and that makes me happy.
I mean, not every phone can be made out of metal, and not every phone should be made out of metal.
Right.
There are materials to suit every taste. I think they've hit a nice midway point here between having durability, and Samsung phones always wear really well.
Mm-hmm.
And something that looks nice and is nice to hold as well. So we're going to jump in the questions. I think we got some email questions that you were sending earlier today.
I can pick up right off the top if you want while we wait for some more live questions to come in.
Yeah, sounds good. So let's go for that. Let's start with Paul.
Yes, Paul writes, more apps than ever support split screen on the Note 3. Could split screen mode become generally available for sufficiently powerful devices, or are there specific OS issues that will prevent that from happening?
So this is probably one for Jerry, but I mean, the Note 3, they've added support for more apps, but mainly it's Google apps, and mainly it's stuff that I think Samsung has added stuff in the OS to support the apps rather than the apps being enabled by the app developer for use of multi-window, right?
When the Note 2 came out, some very gifted developers out there for the Note series too, I want to give them a shout out. You can pretty much make any app split screen if you want to root your phone. So that tells me that it's more dependent on the OS itself than it is the application. So yeah, you know, Samsung can only guess what they think are the best ones to add. And while we would want every one of our apps in there, Samsung doesn't want to give you a menu with 6,260 apps in it. They want to give you, you know, 6 or 8 good ones to choose from.
Right.
That probably explains their reasoning.
Well, and they don't want to have to, you know, like you said, they could probably do it in the OS where they could maybe force it a little bit to make most apps resize properly. But as soon as they do that, and you know, what happens, 5-10% of the apps that just don't size gracefully, that's just not a very good experience. So I think Samsung's making, you know, as much as it stinks to not have it for all the apps, Samsung's probably making the right choice to limit it to the apps that they know are going to work properly. I don't think, you know, at this point, with the size of phone screens and the amount of power under the hood and a lot of phones, you know, the G2 would have no problem running two apps side by side. Like, you know, you can do some hovering stuff. You know, the HTC One, the Galaxy S4, even the Galaxy S3, has no problem running two apps side by side. But it's an issue when you start forcing it.
Yeah, I think if that app is going to be enabled in Android, it's going to be and be widespread, like you were saying. It's going to have to be an OS thing. It's not going to be something that any one manufacturer can force on the rest of the ecosystem.
And I don't think it'll ever be built into Android proper. because this works on the Note 3. And, you know, I looked at it on the Note 2, and I've looked at it on the S4. It works okay, but on that Note 3 with that big screen, I'll bet it works really, really nicely. So, but it's not going to work on the Moto X. That screen's just too small for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some phones you want one app and you want it to work well, and that's more than enough. So let's just move down the list and take a look. I think we've got Jonathan next.
Jerry, you want to grab that one?
Yeah, I'll grab that. Jonathan writes in, I love the specs on the Note 3. My only concern is the size. Does it really fit comfortably in your pocket?
Huh.
Alex, have you stuck it in your pocket?
Surprisingly enough, I have. Yeah, it's. I mean, I reviewed the Galaxy Omega, right, which was the massive 6.3-inch thing. And Samsung knows that it's mainly down to the width of the phone that it factors into how easy it is to put in your pocket. I've had no problems really with a Note 3, and I've only had it for one day, but it's no real pocketability issues. Whereas with the first Note, it had the wider thing, the wider display. It was slightly thicker as well and heavier. That was always a little bit awkward getting in and out of a pocket. This, not so much. And again, going from 5-inch phones to a 5.7, that's very, very, very slim bezels and very, very light. The difference isn't really. It's not as huge as you think it would be.
See, yeah, the Note 1, it kind of put me – I think that's what put me off the big phones because it was so wide, and it was just unwieldy. You know, I'll have to be honest. To me, it was too much. So.
Yeah, I had the Note 2 for a while, and it wasn't a pocket issue as much as a pulling in and out of the pocket. You felt like you were going to drop it sometimes. You were fumbling to make sure it fit in there, but – if they've made the transition to make it narrow enough so that it isn't a conscious thought about whether or not it's going to fit in your jeans pocket, that's what matters.
Yeah, and you were mentioning the whole sort of slippiness factor with the Note 2. That was a big deal as well because it was more rounded than this by far, and it has the curved battery door. And you're putting that in and out of your pocket, there's much more chance that you're going to drop it than this kind of setup where it's a leather texture and it's matte finished anyway.
Hold it back up again. I mean, every picture I've seen, it's got the S2 look back that I really liked.
It reminds me a lot of the GS2. Even has the kind of squared off, if you can see there, the camera lens.
And I really liked it. I still use an S2 as my home phone on T-Mobile every day. So I think
they're doing a good job. And I really hope this is the direction we start seeing them move their design language in, because there's a time and a place for glossy plastic, but I think we've had more than enough glossy plastic from Samsung. It's time for the next. It started with the whole sort of inspired by nature thing where everything was rounded and everything was shiny. It's time for a step beyond that. I think this hopefully is the first step.
I'm really glad to hear you say that it is a notable step, because the first time that I saw the kind of fake leather and the stitching, I thought it was kind of really gaudy and really out there. But when I see your hands on video, I see your pictures, it's a lot more subtle than, I thought when I first saw it.
It depends on the color as well. And you see, straight up, I got the black version because the black version looks nicer. We got to play with both of them at IFA in white and in pink. Even the pink version doesn't look as nice as the black. And you've got a slightly rougher texture to it.
All right, I'll hop down here. I'm going to take the next question. Simon writes, I'm thinking about getting the Note 3 in Canada when it comes out, and I was wondering about what speed micro SD card can it support. I've got the option of 64 gig class 6, class 10, and UHS-I, and I don't want to pay for a card that won't be used to its full potential.
So kind of an easy answer is did a few tests on this Note 3 with a UHS 1 card. It looks like it only supports up to class 10 speeds, so that's the hard limit of the SD slot, I guess, in this thing. You get about 15 or so writing, and I think...
Buy the UHS-I card, 1 card, because when you plug it in your computer, you will appreciate the fact that you bought it.
That's true. It's not just about the speed of the slots, about the speed. And, of course, if you're buying an SD card, it could last several phones, right?
Right.
And it's, I guess, especially when you're talking about a 64-gig card, if you're going to be moving a lot of big files, you're going to appreciate the speed. I definitely wouldn't go class 6.
I forget what class 6 even was, but class 10 cards are so cheap right now, you better off that's the baseline. I guess we should also mention that 32 and 64 gigs, there's no 16 gig version. So it's, they've learned that lesson where whereas with the S4, it was all about, there's a lot of fuss over the fact that of that 16 gigs, most of it was taken up, well, at least half of it was taken up with TouchWiz.
Smart.
Yes, very.
So I think we have another Jonathan with a question.
I'll grab that one. Another Jonathan writes, is there any noticeable lag on the Note 3 compared to the other Galaxy phones? Because I heard the Galaxy S4 had some lag issues.
Yeah, the Galaxy S4 did have some lag issues. And Jerry, you still have the Timo.
Yes, and S4 it hasn't been updated, and it still has lag issues. Come on, Samsung, T-Mobile, get it together.
I have a European S4 here. They patched that out of the European one pretty quickly. Some versions are still lagging behind. This is a Snapdragon 800. It's the fastest Android chip, or one of the fastest chips around. If you have a Snapdragon 800 phone that lags, something is seriously wrong.
Right.
And this is every bit as fast as the Z1 that I was using last week. Is essentially everything you do on here is instant. It's got to the point where it's so buttery smooth that it's just buttery smooth. No lag at all.
Looks like we have some live questions piling up too. Do you want to pick one of those out there, Alex?
Yes. Okay. So we have a question. Can you go over the SIM unlocking controversy? And is there an easy way to understand it? It's from Kevin O'Quinn from the forums. When this thing came out in Europe this week, there was actually a sticker on the box of every single, I think, European and Latin American Note 3. And I'm not sure whether you can see that, but it's...
Focus.
No, it's not going to focus. Basically, it says that it's only compatible with European SIMs. And there's one, the American version, Latin American version, saying that it's only compatible with American SIMs. And it doesn't go into any more detail than that. And there was no official, there was no press release, there's no official announcement as to what was actually going on. So there's a lot of confusion. And we had reports of people on forums who'd imported these things, running them in countries where they weren't officially sold. They put their, say, an American SIM into a European Note 3, and suddenly you have a SIM lock screen on an unlocked device. And that was, there's a lot of drama about that. But skipping some of that for a second, basically what's happening is this is a way for Samsung to crack down on unauthorized imports, on gray imports. So if you, it's down to which SIM you use to activate it first. If you have an unlocked Note 3, you have to activate it and run through setup with a SIM from the region where it's sold. And by region, it's not just the country. So you could activate a European Note 3 with a SIM from anywhere in Europe. But you have to do that the first time you activate it. Or if you use a foreign SIM, say you use an American SIM in a European Note 3, you'll get the SIM lock screen. And that will mean it will effectively, I don't want to say permanently locked, but there'll be nothing that you can do without getting in touch with Samsung or someone else that has unlock codes to run your SIM in the foreign Note 3.
That's bad for nerds like us.
It's bad, but not. I mean, it's not as bad as we thought, right? We thought that it was effectively a DVD-type region coding that we were dealing with. That's not quite the case. So 99% of people who buy a European or an American unlocked Note 3, they put their SIM in it from their country. They're never going to see any problems because they can take it out. It'll have been activated using their home SIM, and then they'll then be able to put in, if they travel elsewhere, they can put a foreign SIM in. It'll be completely unlocked.
But so I still think that this sets, I mean, so I'm glad that it's not as bad as we first thought, that it's, you know, it's not permanently region locked, but I still think it sets a bad precedent from the fact that, you know, the people, at least from our point of view here in the US, is a lot of the people that are buying unlocked devices are importing their unlocked devices. Right. So it's going to throw a big wrench into things for the importers, you know, who are now going to have to buy them and activate them once with a local SIM and then ship them out, or, you know, and you know they're going to do it, and it'll add a little bit to the cost. But, you know, I don't see it as big of an issue in Europe, where a lot of people are buying unlocked devices in the local area and then maybe taking them around. But for US people, you know, not a lot of manufacturers sell directly unlocked in the US, and you have to go through an importer. And, you know, if this starts to become the norm, I'm not gonna say that it's a very good situation.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning, I think the unlocked Latin American one, it's the Americas region, so
right.
I think is still classed as being US SIMs are still classed as local to that, so you could
yes, I believe so.
Use that to activate it. Not the case with the European one though. And the surprising thing for me was how much of an issue this must have been for Samsung for them to actually have to implement this whole thing.
Right,
there must have been.
This is like a way for them to manage their inventories, right. Kind of, you know, knowing when they do their rollouts and, you know, when they send 5 million to this region that like those are going to that region.
They stay there, yeah.
But that's, I mean, this is maybe that should tell them, you know, to do a little bit more work on their end to know where the demand is and send the phones where they need to be sent in the first place.
Yeah, true. So it's bad, I guess, if you were planning on importing one, and it's an inconvenience. It's a pain if you've imported one and you've activated it with the wrong SIM. Right. I mean, there are options if you do that. You can take it to a Samsung service center. There are places online where you can get unlock codes. It's still very strange that this like minority of customers that import phones are creating that much of a problem for Samsung. But
right. And well, I think that why it seems like a bigger issue than it is the people that are importing phones and buying unlocked on day one, those are the people that are going to have the biggest complaints and like the very, very, very vocal minority. Mm-hmm. And so that's maybe why it seems like a bigger issue.
I think what made it such a big deal is the scary warning on the box that only tells you half the story.
No, I agree. The communication was pretty bad on this. I mean, this sticker that you can't see because my camera can't focus properly is it's a scary warning. It doesn't tell the whole story. It implies that it will never support SIMs from outside that region.
It had you and I and probably 1,500 other tech writers across the globe freaking out for 24 hours.
We had a really good rant ready to go on this, didn't we, Jerry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's and while it's still a little bit consumer unfriendly, if you are the type of person who wants to buy an unlocked phone and know how to buy an unlocked phone, you also know how to order a $30 prepaid SIM card.
Exactly, yeah. And the people
have it shipped.
Yeah. And the people exporting these know how to get around it anyway. So
So
I mean, that's enough on that. It's a pain if you've imported. It's not as scary as the sticker says. There are easy ways around it.
Indeed. So do you want to take another live question or go back to the emails while you pick one out?
Let's go back to the emails. We'll take another look at live in a second. We've got a question from Supertongue.
Yes, somebody with an interesting screen name, Supertongue, right?
He gave his real name. I gave his handle instead, Supertongue.
Oh, awesome. So part one is, how is the camera quality compared to the Note 2 and the 120 frames per second and the Photosphere support specifically? Do you want to take
so, part one first? Camera quality on the whole, in a sentence, is basically the same as the Galaxy S4. The big thing for me in just general use of the camera is that captures are a lot faster than the S4, and that's just down to probably a combination of faster CPU and maybe faster internal storage too. But the kind of slight stutter, the slight lag that you had with the S4 when it would first take a picture and it would have to, if you're taking mm-hmm. HDR shot, it would have to process it. That's much faster on the Note 3. On the Note 3. So
good.
That's good to see. Overall image quality, like I was saying, about the same as the S4. That's by no means a bad thing. The S4 still is a really good camera. The 120 frames per second thing, I tried to find it on here. This is a Snapdragon 800 version. I'm pretty sure the slow motion thing is exclusive to the Exynos version, which is the 3G only one that's sold in some countries.
And I saw you post one of their Photosphere type pictures.
LG's had their own version of Photosphere for a while where they call it something else, but basically
Panorama VR or something
like that. And it takes basically a Photosphere and you can share it just as you normally would a Photosphere. This works exactly the same. The process of taking it is a bit different, and actually better in a lot of ways. So you launch it through the camera app as you normally would. You have this sort of overlay and you fill in the patches and stuff. But you actually have a globe in the corner of the screen, which means it's a lot easier to see if you've missed anywhere. If you're using the normal Google Photosphere app, then it's easy to be left with a blotch somewhere, especially if you're shooting outside, you can't really see the screen very well. With this, you have a grid that you fill in, and you have a rotating sphere that actually shows you where you're missing. And the shots came out for looking pretty good. Posted one on Google Plus, and that was just a very quick, rough shot that I was doing outside. And it looks decent. It seems to be a little bit more forgiving of the kind of movement that you get when you're taking a photosphere. So I think they did a good job.
I think it's impressive that they were able to make it work with G Plus's Photosphere Viewer.
Yeah, very.
That's good. That was really good move, Samsung, because now I can look at the pictures Alex takes.
Yep. I'm sure Google would have had some input in there. And,
I hope so.
There would have been some encouragement for manufacturers like Samsung and LG.
Galaxy S4 Developer Edition or Google Play Edition probably helped that too.
Maybe, yeah. And I would imagine that, I mean, this is a TouchWiz thing, not necessarily a Note 3 thing. And that you imagine if the Google Play Edition S4 can get it, it's probably just a matter of time before the regular S4 gets it as part of a software update.
Right.
We can hope.
We hope.
I was going to say that the second part of his question we've already covered about the back cover compared to the Note 2.
Yeah, so. it's a million times better. That's my answer to that. let's see. So we got a question on Ekoman from Brian. Ekoman is the new way of getting to special functions on here that use the S Pen. You have this wheel that pops up, you can hover the pen over. You get access to action memo, actionable note of actionable notes that you can take. A bunch of other stuff like Samsung's S Finder, the scrapbooker thing, which lets you cut out different sections of apps and web pages and videos and all that good stuff. And he's asking, is there any way to launch it without the S Pen? I think we were talking about this earlier. There's stuff on here that you can only get to using the S Pen, which is a little bit weird. So, for example, you want to get into Scrapbooker, the thing for actually cutting out stuff. The only way that I can see to cut stuff out is to use the S Pen. And it's the same with Pen Window, which is actually part of the multitasking thing on this phone. So, let's try that again. Basically, it's windowed multitasking, and there's no way to get to that without using the pen, which is a bit odd.
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, some things you would think would work just fine with a finger really quick, like, you know, just drawing a box for a multitasking window. Yeah. But I can see why they probably just want more people to have the pen in their hands more often and, you know, feel like they're using those features.
Yeah, they were saying that at the event in Germany that menu is all about getting people, like you're saying, getting people using the pen, and for people who are already using the pen, getting them to see what else they can do with the pen, and helping them get more out of the device. It's I guess maybe a bit of a design compromise, but yeah, if you want to get the most out of this device, it's you want to use the pen.
And
so, gone.
That's the Note. Come on, people. It's the Note. It's big and the pen. That's the great thing about it. Right.
So we also have a question from Johnny on OIS, just kind of leading on from the camera stuff. What are phones now with optical image stabilization? He's wondering if the Note 3 has OIS for pictures. And it does not. So you have Samsung's software stabilization thing, which you can use in video in certain situations and works for stills as well. But there's no OIS, and that's, I guess, something you have to deal with.
But it's there's a software component, right?
The software that you can use in video does what any other software stabilization does. It crops and zooms in a little bit, and you have a window within a window that kind of works in that way. You can't use that when you're recording 4K, though, and some other stuff is turned off in 4K mode.
Right.
This phone supports 4K video. It's one of the first that does.
Right, and the fact that it's capable of doing 4K tells you that if they are really smart about it, they could really do some image stabilization if it's capable of capturing so much resolution.
Maybe, but I guess one step at a time. I mean, 4K video takes a hell of a lot of processing power and a hell of a lot of SD card space as well. And we were looking at some pictures I took earlier, and it actually comes out really well, even downscaled to 1080. Shots recorded at 4K.
Yeah.
If you crunch them down, it essentially eliminates a lot of the noise that you get with full size video. So I was kind of ready to dismiss this as something that, oh, it's just a technical thing that they're showing off that they can do 4K. But it actually works pretty well. And there'll be someone somewhere who buys this and has a 4K TV, and they'll be able to shoot really awesome video and watch it. Then that's cool.
Cool.
Yeah. So moving on, we have a question from Esmindo.
Do you got that one, Jerry? On the email list, rather?
Want me to grab that one? Yeah, I got that one. Esmindo writes, how is the speaker on the Note 3? Is it any better than the Note 2?
Kind of. The speaker's in a weird place on this phone, and because the back is essentially one solid piece, there's no speaker on the back, and of course there's no speaker on the front except the earpiece. It's sort of hidden down below, and it's kind of small, and I think maybe a little bit tinnier than some of the earlier Samsung phones we've had. That's probably just down to its placement on the phone more than anything, because it's blasting down rather than blasting back, so you get more, it sounds a little bit tinnier, I think. That's just kind of a compromise. It's no HTC boom sound, right? That's sort of the benchmark for bassy audio. And
right.
If you have a tiny speaker at the bottom of the phone, that's a design compromise in the other direction. So it's okay. It's not terrible. It's not brilliant.
Alrighty, I'm going to hop down to the next email here. Rudy writes, now that T-Mobile doesn't subsidize devices, am I better off buying an unlocked Note 3 over the T-Mobile branded one? Or will that have issues with LTE? I've enjoyed the flexibility of multi-carrier support with the Nexus 4, so it would be nice, but not mandatory. Also, has anyone confirmed USB on-the-go support on the Note 3?
So that last point is pretty easy, I think. Both the two previous notes had USB on the go. This one definitely does. As far as an unlocked Note 3 that works in the US and also has LTE, I'm not sure that actually exists.
I haven't looked at the radio bands quite yet.
Especially one existing that can work on AT&T and T-Mobile, HSPA Plus, and LTE on all the bands is possible. We saw that. What was it? The Galaxy S2 did that? And the S3?
I think some of the Sony phones
did. But it's not something you see very often.
Yeah, some of the last couple of Sony phones.
You see it more often than I think then.
supported all the bands, but I think Jerry's correct that some of the S2s supported both. And as AT&T and T-Mobile start to cross over their bands more and more, they're starting to support more of the similar bands. It's going to work. But I would be very, very, very sure of all the specs on an unlocked model before you buy it if you're expecting to hop between the two.
Yeah, and like we were saying before with the whole region locking issue, if you're importing it from anywhere, make sure it doesn't come with that scary sticker.
Rudy, I can give you, I haven't touched the Note 3 yet, unfortunately, but a little bit of insight. My wife really wanted an HTC One and had the same question that you have. We use T-Mobile here at the house. In the end, we decided to go with the T-Mobile one because it has Wi-Fi calling.
That's another thing to consider.
True. I guess there's no Note 3 that's going to be as unlocked as the Nexus 4 was, and that's probably not ever going to be the case, right? There's going to be there's the American unlocked one, which is sold in Latin America, that is Exynos and that has quad band HSPA, but not LTE. And if you're on T-Mobile, I guess that's not going to be a great experience there for you because you're missing a bunch of bands.
Well, And I mean, as far as T-Mobile goes, sure, they don't subsidize, but if you're interested in financing a phone, T-Mobile will finance the branded one from them too. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, their full unsubsidized prices aren't cheap, but neither is going to be importing an unlocked one at this point. It's going to be expensive. Yeah. So,
there's that. And maybe there will be an unlocked US one that works across both carriers at some point, but not been announced. We don't know.
So let's see. Do you have another live question maybe you want to grab here, Alex?
So we have one on USB 3 from Kevin O'Quinn. This is, I think I'm right in saying, the first phone that has a USB 3 port on it. It comes with the sort of funny two-pronged thing where it's a USB, micro USB, and this other bit on the side. So he's talking about an older cable and what the advantage is and all that kind of thing. So again, I'm going to sort of put this on Jerry to a certain degree, but I think the advantages of USB 3 are first charging speed. So you can charge faster over USB 3 because there's more juice running over it, and transfer speeds. So you'll be able to pull content off if you connect it to a computer.
And
that's your benefit. It remains to be seen. I'm sorry. I'm having some lag issues here, I think. I'm sorry, guys. It remains to be seen how much faster it does either or any at all.
Yeah, that's kind of the kind of thing that's difficult to test. I mean, the important thing, I guess, is if you have a bunch of the standard micro USB connectors, those will work just fine with the Note 3 in charging and also data connectivity. But if you have a newer machine that supports USB 3, then you've got the new cable to use, and that will work probably faster, hopefully.
Right. That's good. I was a little worried about that when I saw that really gnarly looking connector on the bottom.
It looks weird, doesn't it? I saw that for the first time at the briefing, and it's like, what the hell is that?
I guess it's just extra pins on the connector.
Pins. I'm looking at it right now. You have the standard pins and then a bunch of other pins. And it's, I guess, kind of interesting to see that and Apple moving in the opposite direction with Lightning, right? You have a much smaller connector from Apple, and everyone else is moving to USB 3, which is much larger. So that's something else. Let's take a look down the list. So I think we've got some questions from David, kind of a three-part thing, if you want to jump to that.
Sure, I can handle that one. Let's see. So let's go one part at a time. David writes, is it worth upgrading my Note 2 to a Note 3? And it's kind of a personalized question, but what do you think on the whole?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a big upgrade. I would even say it's probably a more significant upgrade than the first Note was to the second. Hmm. Mainly just, I mean, the physicality of it is completely different. And that in itself is almost a reason to upgrade. The other fact is the fact that you have a much faster CPU in there. You have really cutting-edge specs. You have a much brighter display than has been in any other Super AMOLED device before. I think it's a really huge upgrade, and it's, you know, even though the Note 3 is the Note 2 rather is still a decent device, it's worth the upgrade, I think.
Alrighty, and number two, will there be a software upgrade for the Note 2 so that it can use the Galaxy Gear?
Yes, and that's probably coming sooner rather than later. We had DJ Lee from Samsung this week saying that the S4 is going to be getting the update next month, and that the S3 and the Note 2 should be getting it by the end of the year. And the Galaxy Gear, you're still going to be locked into the Samsung ecosystem, and with these upgrades taking place, it's still going to be you're looking at any carrier branded device is going to have to go through carrier certification before you get your Galaxy Gear capable upgrade, because it hooks into the OS to do all the fancy stuff that it does. So you're probably talking end of the year for unlocked devices, maybe a little longer for the US, maybe, possibly.
Right. Let's see here.
Or a lot longer.
Yeah. You don't know. Even if they're just adding the watch functionality, you can expect the carriers to have issues with more peripherals connecting over USB or Bluetooth, rather, not USB, and using data. You know, they're going to have issues with that. So, let's see. Number three on David's question here: is the pen on the Note 3 the same as the Note 2 with just a software upgrade, or is the pen actually different?
Well, the pen is different, and I'm not sure. I mean, it's been a long time since I used a Note 2, so I can't really talk about sensitivity or hovering or anything like that. But the main way that it's different is that it'll fit in the actual dock down here, either upside down or the right way up. So it's
Great.
You can fit it in like that or like that. It was always kind of an annoyance before with the last one where you'd have to there'll be only one way to put it back in correctly. So you would put it in this way, and then it wouldn't fit, and you have to turn it around, and that was just an added irritation.
So, yeah, it would slide in incorrectly up until the very end. So, of course, you put it in wrong every time.
Fiddle around with it, yeah. So just from a usability standpoint, there's that. I think in terms of stuff that's bundled with it, you actually get replacement rubberized nubs for the end of the S Pen, at least with the European one. Hmm. And there's a metal tool that you can use to replace them as well.
That's good.
What's that? Let's see. I think we've got a question from Kenneth, if you want to get that, Jerry.
Yeah, I can get that. And I seem to have caught up to our stream here. Kenneth writes in, Samsung has released a new bootloader for the S4 and Note 3 that will bring an activated SE Linux and set it to restrictive. If you try to downgrade or root, it will cause an eFuse to mark your device's warranty as void. It's very easy to see if this has been triggered or not. Simply boot your device into download mode. eFuse is a technology that basically is irreversible once it's triggered. This all must come down to Samsung Knox. The problem most people see with it is that it's not optional, and Galaxy S4 owners were not warned. What are your thoughts? Since I've started, you know what? I don't like the fact that they changed the S4. I agree with you there. The S4, you bought it a certain way, and now they have modified something that goes beyond software. When you modify the bootloader, it's a piece of software, but it still does more than most software can do. You wouldn't like Microsoft to put out an update that makes your computer not be able to boot into, you know, another operating system. So that's kind of low. But as far as activating SE Linux and tightening up things for Knox and even using the eFuse, dude, they want this in the, you know, corporate environment. Samsung really wants it there, and this is how you do it. We can make fun of other platforms that are not open, but when it's not open in this way, in a way that you can hack it easily, that makes it more secure by definition, and it's got to happen. I think they should do it and then offer a version without it for people that want to tinker.
I mean, the ultimate, we were just talking about things being locked down to carriers. The ultimate sort of geek version of this phone would be no SE Linux or SE Linux permissive or whatever it's called. Unlockable bootloader, and it works across AT&T or TiMo. But I think that kind of phone is probably never, ever going to happen.
Well, especially with the Note 3, because I actually know somebody. He works for a trucking company, and when they are available for him to test for AT&T, he possibly wants to buy 1,700 of them for the employees on the road. That's a big deal. That if they could make this a productive and secure device, that's huge to Samsung, and they really want that. So, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it says your warranty's void now. And yeah, an eFuse is irreversible, but look at all the other irreversible things that have been overcome. Never count it out.
Yeah, there's always it's always unbreakable until it isn't.
Right.
So let's move on. I think we have a question from Pete, which I'll read out. We have, let's see. What features do you think will be brought onto the Note 2 in the future? And that's kind of an interesting question because Samsung has, in the past year or so, moved towards... as they've updated TouchWiz devices to a new version of Android, it's come with a new TouchWiz experience. Mm-hmm. I think it was the at least the S2 and the original Note that got parts of the software from the Galaxy Note 2 and the S3.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's really not a whole lot on here feature-wise with the stuff that uses the pen that couldn't be ported to the Note 2. I think the obvious candidate is going to be this... Pi menu or Air Command, whatever you want to call it, the thing to draw you into using the pen in more ways. That would be easy enough to do. And Samsung actually did that in a bit of a different way in the Note 2. You had a, I forget what it was called, but it, Andrew, you might know, used it for a while. It opened up an extra home screen page when you took the pen out.
Yeah, yeah. There was a home screen page that had, you know, quick launches into like the sketchbook and some of the note-taking things that as soon as you took the pen out by default, it would pop over to that screen.
Pops you out of that, yeah. So, I mean, that's just the thing they have now is really a version of that that just makes more sense and is less intrusive.
Right.
So I think anything that's app or software driven that they can get over, they will. They know, you know, people buy these things for 2 years and they know it's a good way to build goodwill in their customers to have the software from the new one eventually be ported back to the old one. There's some stuff there that is going to be limited by hardware, so the new camera stuff is probably going to be, you know, you're not going to get 4K video on the Note 2. You might get Photosphere or surround shot or whatever it's called. That's probably feasible with the hardware that's in there, but we'll have to wait and see. I think it's going to be... there's going to be a lot of stuff that they can port over, but at the same time, the higher end stuff, the fanciest stuff, is going to be limited by hardware.
Let's see here. We're going to jump down to Tommy, who writes, is it true that apps can be moved to the SD card on the Note 3? I think a lot of people probably have this question.
Let's check, actually.
Doing it live, folks.
Doing it live. So this was a big deal on the S4 because...
Alex. What's the number for 911 in England?
let's see. So, yeah, a big deal on the S4 because most of them were 16 gigs only of storage, and TouchWiz was using a big chunk of that. So they patched back in apps to SD card. And let's just see where things are. Yes, you can move things to the SD card.
Awesome.
So, yep, that's still there. I mean, you still have to, that's still app-specific, that's still something that developers have to let the phone do. You can't force it on.
Right.
But yeah, it's there. And it's actually, I mean, that whole side of things is less of an issue now because the base model in the West is 32 gig one. So you're not going to buy a 16 gig Note 3. I think there is one, but only in parts of Asia. So you're not going to buy a phone and have like 8 gigs left because half of it's taken over with the OS. So we have our moving on to what I think is probably going to be our last question. We have a question from Ryan who writes, a lot of people suggesting that the extra gigabyte of RAM is useless. What are your thoughts on it? And is this just RAM envy? So, Jerry, is this just RAM envy? Is there a point to 3 gigs of RAM?
If it was useless, Samsung would not have put it in there. They know RAM. They know what, you know, smartphone memory requirements on Android are. They've been doing this a long time. There's two things. The backlash they got from the S4 from the nerd crowd. We are a small minority, but we're loud.
It wasn't just the nerd crowd, and it made TV news over here.
So they've got to try to prevent any of that. And they're Samsung. How much cheaper can RAM be than buying it from yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
So they just threw it in. I think it's a great thing, and I hope that other manufacturers realize, hey, we can double the RAM in this phone or add a whole extra gig or for like 19, 20 cents, whatever it's going to cost. Let's just do it and help future-proof it.
Right. I think that... the future-proofing point is the big one, especially with something like the Note, that you can see it getting updates in the future. And, you know, with all this dual window stuff, and, you know, we talked about that earlier, expanding that, you know, that's going to be important, you know, when you have a whole, you know, the Note 3 has a lot going on in the software. I mean, if it wasn't already apparent, there's a lot of stuff going on. And that's just, like Jerry said, the trade-off is minuscule, and they get to future-proof themselves a little bit.
And so I'm looking at this RAM status thing here, and it says 2.19 gigabytes used out of 2.38.
So, and it's Android uses any RAM you allow it to.
Right. ReRAM is wasted RAM.
Right. Alex, and another thing, what is the retail price in the UK on that?
It depends where you buy it. If you bought it day one from Samsung, it was £650.
So we're talking right around $900 to $1,000 US dollars.
Yeah.
When you invest that much money in something, people are going to keep this device until it breaks. They're not going to update next year.
It's $1,050 with the exchange rate. I mean, you take some of that off with the VAT and all that, yeah, but still.
But you know, this is
not a cheap phone. It's
right.
You buy something like this, you expect it to be, like you were saying, future-proofed. You expect to be able to use it 2 years down the line, and you know, part of that is you get the top-end hardware in now to be able to run stuff further down the line. So I think we have one live question, and because we have a lot of we've had a lot of CyanogenMod mod news lately, and it's a question from Santos saying, do you think it's worth installing CyanogenMod on the Note 3, or will you lose too many features when you do that? And especially with, I'm thinking with a device so sort of feature centric as the Note 3, it's all about what you can do with a pen, and the ways you can do multitasking on this thing. I don't know. I want to hear what you guys think. I'm not sure I would put a custom ROM on this.
I don't think I would either. I'm not much of the custom ROM person in the first place, but I think when you buy the Note 3, it's sure part of the story is about the hardware, what's underneath the hood. But a lot of this stuff, I mean, like we said, you're paying $950 or $1,000 or the equivalent about for this phone. You know, if you just wanted some really nice hardware and a big screen, there are other phones that are cheaper that, you know, you're not paying for the pen, you're not paying for the extra digitizer, all the extra features that are baked into the software if you just want to run a custom ROM on it.
Agreed. You know, if you want a big device that runs stock Android, buy a GSM Nexus 7.
Yep.
Use one of those apps that will let you use Google Voice to make phone calls with.
Or buy a Galaxy Mega if you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there you go. To me, the Note 3, if I pick one up, and I'm not ruling it out, I'm really looking forward to some of these new S Pen features. It's all about the S Pen to me.
Yep, definitely. So I want to sort of leave it open to you guys now. If you guys have any other questions or want to know or have any sort of burning issues you want to point out with this Note 3, I have one in my hands here, so have at it.
Go ahead, Jerry. I'm not entirely sure. I think we covered so many things.
You said this, the screen is better.
The screen is actually much better. I'm not sure how well it's come across on camera, but that is the screen on full brightness.
Because I know you took some 4K video out along your little winding creek river thing that you like to go on. It was bright and sunny. Could you see the screen out there in that?
I think direct sunlight, you're still going to struggle.
Well, of course.
This is the best Super AMOLED screen I've used for daylight visibility
by far.
And that was kind of a problem on the S4 because... I think just because it didn't have the, I guess it might have had a different subpixel setup. We haven't checked that yet. But no, the pixels themselves are just brighter. It's clear to see when you turn it on.
Good. That's a good, you know, good job, Samsung. You make great screens. It's nice seeing you trickle that down to phones.
Cool.
Yeah, so I think that was my big question too. So I think we covered all the bases here.
Yep. So we've got a video walkthrough of this thing up right now. We're going to have reviews up very soon. And of course, there are more devices on the way. So let's just, do we have any more live questions? I think we mostly covered everything. So Jerry or Andrew, do you want to take us home?
Let's have Jerry take us home. I brought us out of the G2.
All right. We had a lot of fun, guys. It was nice talking to you live. And, you know, we like to do this on Fridays. And if you want to send us an email and get it read on the podcast that we do every Friday, the address is podcast@androidcentral.com. All three of us are on Google Plus. We don't have fancy little plus moniker URLs yet.
Google. We're not Plus Phil Hankinson.
No. But you just search our names at the bar up at the top. It's Jerry Hildenbrand, Alex Doby, Andrew Martinick, and you'll find us. We like to talk about the phones that we play with because we're nerds, not just writers. And as always, all our podcasts are always brought to you by shopandroid.com. we're working on Note 3 stuff. We're as excited about this phone as you are. You know, go have a look at everything that's there. If you have any questions or you just want to call and say hello to the people at Shop Android, that's 888-468-6158.
Cool. So, Jerry, Andrew,
Alex,
thank you.
Jerry.
We'll be back hopefully next week.
Absolutely.
We'll see if Phil's around. I think Phil is on his travels next week.
So I can untie him now?
You can let him out. You can run the site when we finish the podcast.
I think between yesterday and today, we've done just fine. So cool. If Phil's gone, we won't run the ship into the ground completely.
We'll try not to.
Oh, we're supposed to try not to.
Damn it.
All right, okay, guys, we'll see you next time.
Later on.